Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I am your host, Justin Worsham. With us today, back yet again, is a friend of mine. I'm going to say, we just talking, once a year friend, Chris Mars, ladies and gentlemen, is here with us.
Thank you. Thanks everybody here in the live studio.
Yes, they're very kind, very warming studio audience.
Giving them the Cronuts was a great idea. I think they're really happy.
Yeah, it really gives them a little charge just to get that insulin flowing before the show.
And Justin serves as his own warm-up comic, which is fantastic.
I throw out the Cronuts, and then we give some t-shirts, but it's only t-shirts from other podcasts, which I think that's part of the humor of it.
My only issue with the t-shirts was the t-shirt cannon. I thought you were a little close.
Really?
To some of those people. I know they were excited. One lady, I mean, she took that t-shirt.
Everybody's a critic, I guess, but you know, listen.
I just think you can have the experience.
I'm just saying one note. It's one note that I had.
It's 100% cotton,
was fantastic.
Chris. It's 100% cotton. You take 100% cotton to the dome. This is their vacation. They come here to see the show, and this is what they want. They want to come home with a little mark.
I'm just saying you didn't have to have it on the highest setting. That was like a 40-mile
I go 110%, baby, all day, every day. That's what I am. I don't half-ass things. You know what I mean? Except for maybe production on the show. But when it comes to warm-up for the show and dealing with my live studio audience that comes here for a vacation, it's a special experience from them, you know. Sure. A lot of people, they're not – I mean, sure, they come here just to go to Disneyland after, but they come here first. You see what I mean? They come here to double dip. It's not about going to Disneyland. They've already been to Disneyland, Chris.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I was talking to some of them, and they were so excited to be here.
Yeah.
And it's, you know.
And they want that. You know, it's like it's Rickles. You want him to say an offensive racial joke about your ethnicity. That's what you want. You want to take a t-shirt to the face if you come to see me live.
You're right. Okay. You're right. I stand corrected.
I don't want to start things off.
I should not try and tell you how to run your live studio audience. That was out of line. And that's on me.
That's good. You know what? It takes a big man to admit when he's wrong. And I appreciate you immensely. Good to see you.
You too, man.
We started late. For you, those of you that are listening to this live, you know, but for people catching up on the podcast, we just spent probably a good half hour, 45 minutes just chatting.
Totally.
Chris is that guy. I don't know if anybody has this kind of person in their life. And I think I say this every time you're on the show, but it's that guy that when you get to see him, you're like, oh, it's so good to hang out and it's fun, right? And then you go forever without seeing each other. And then that time, like as soon as you leave here, I'm going to be like, I'm going to try and hang out with that guy sometime.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you don't see each other for a year. And then you come back, you're like, oh, this guy's so great. Why did I not see them more often? Is that an L.A. thing?
No, I think it's an L.A. everywhere? Thing. Well, I think for people listening outside of L.A., it's hard to remember. You and I live about 20 minutes apart in L.A., for the rest of the country, you might as well live, like for those of you in Texas, it's the equivalent of having a friend in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because you just sort of hear, especially when you have kids, you just don't try. And I say 20 minutes. It's anywhere between 20 and 90 minutes apart is how far apart we live.
And you're right. You no matter. And I'm wondering, hearing you say that makes me wonder, is it because we're just such colossal pussies that we...
No, that's it. I don't know the other option.
I found it. I hit the nail on the head. Remind everybody, how many kids do you have? What are their ages, genders, all that mix?
I have three. I have three boys, and they are now 9, 7, and 3.
Oh.
My 3-year-old will be 4 next month, though, so we're getting close.
And do you have an itchy trigger finger to get that one into kindergarten? I always felt like I was counting down to public school. I don't know why that is, but I was really excited, and now that I've got a first grader and a third grader, life is pretty damn good, if I can be honest.
Yeah, no, it's been very nice the last 2 years because my older two are at the same school this year and last year, and so that was nice. And then our little guy, our school is going to have a transitional kindergarten, what they call out here, which is TK, it's basically like a preschool, but it's more of a program. It's a preschool program that's the year before kindergarten, and they're supposedly adding that at our school next year, which my wife and I are very excited about because we're talking about one drop off situation,
right?
And so that I couldn't be more excited about that, and I do feel for the little guy because now he's watching his brothers, you know, do Little League and basketball and all this stuff. And he is just like a caged tiger
trying to
get into. So we just signed him up for T-ball, which was really exciting. He will be old enough this spring to do T-ball. And so that'll be his first sport, and we're excited to get him involved.
What other sports have your guys done?
They've done, you know, a lot. I mean, they've done baseball and basketball. They soccer. Did do soccer. They did 1 year of soccer. And but it's funny, neither of my kids really took to soccer, the two older ones at least. They weren't into it as much. And baseball they just became obsessed with. And then my oldest played his first season of flag football this year, which he really enjoyed. And I think that my wife will frequently remind me that our kids aren't going to play tackle football when they get older.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we'll see what happens. We're 5 or 6 years away from having to make that decision.
Here in Burbank, we have a league. I did the flag football. I was offensive coordinator. I don't want to brag. I barely bring this up on the show.
I have heard you were an innovator, though.
Yeah, I was.
They've said Bill Walsh.
Yep.
June Jones, run and shoot guy.
Yep,
and then
yep.
Justin Worsham.
Justin Worsham when it comes to 5-person offense, you know what I mean? I'm not going to lump myself in, and I'm not going to insist that I'm put on the football Mount Rushmore of offensive great minds. But when you look at what I was able to accomplish, you know, and I don't like to toot my own horn.
But and I've looked many times at what you accomplished.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's hard to not notice. but you know, with five kids in a kindergarten to second grade age bracket, it's pretty impressive. And that's, I don't want to gloat. I don't want to get too cocky. I know that in football you're supposed to say we're just looking at the next game. You know, we're on to Cincinnati. That's what I'm supposed to say,
right?
But let's just say that I don't know that the Burbank 49ers are going to know or be prepared defensively for what the Burbank Bills are going to be bringing to the field next season. There may or may not be a hurry-up situation. And I feel comfortable even saying that, even though I know he's listening. I know he's scouting us now.
Oh,
and I'm
yeah.
just going to put it out there.
It's a year-round thing now.
Burbank. Well, you know, you joke, but our head coach has already asked for a couple practices, even though it doesn't start until February.
But I'm going to give you some credit, because I think that it was John Gruden who pointed out that coordinating 5 second graders is the equivalent of coordinating 47 professional level.
Oh, yeah.
Players.
Yeah. It's a well-known fact. Yeah, it is a well-known fact.
So you should feel, I mean, again, we've all read this in the sports pages here in LA about your many accomplishments. Yeah. I don't want to bore your audience.
Thank you. Thank you for your consideration.
But I think that, you should feel good about that.
I do.
Did your kids like football?
Oh, yeah. They loved it. Especially my older son. He was kind of the star of the team. And the younger one.
Well, his dad's calling the plays.
Yeah, so. Well, that's the thing, is that there was actually even a moment where one of the parents was upset that their kindergartner was not playing enough. And so she came to me and she's like, well, how would you feel if Jacob wasn't playing as much? Because he was playing both sides of the ball. He was the oldest kid on the team. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, Jacob A is the oldest kid on the team. That's why he plays both sides. And what she didn't know was that my younger son, who was also a kindergartner, played even less than her kid. And I said, he's always at the practices. Her son didn't come to every practice.
Yeah.
I said, but he's been to every practice and your kid plays more. And I said, so it's not about who I am as a coach, which I was very thankful, because otherwise there's no way. And I also had the very shameful moment as a father of like, they do this thing where you play on half the field. And we needed to sub in somebody. And so they were calling for Jack. And, you know, kids, like when they're not in the game, they just kind of sit Indian style and they're playing. They're, you know, smashing ants with their mouthpiece or something.
You're asking what's in the snack.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, they were like, Jack, get it. And they had to hurry. And so I wasn't thinking, and I'm super embarrassed by it, to be honest. But I kind of did like a back, like, you know, not an actual shove, but a back like direction, and I just leveled my son. Like I pushed him a little too fast or knocked him off balance, and he just slid. He wasn't hurt, but it just looked bad. Where I was like,
get in there, Worsham. All right, on your feet. You're okay.
Well, and I was unaware. Like I had tunnel vision. I was unaware of the other parents. It's super sad and pathetic. But I was truly unaware of the other, like where I was, what was going on, and the other coach that was there. He was like, he goes, it's his kid. That's his kid. Don't everybody like telling the other team. We had to sideline right next to each other, and all the parents are just standing on the side of the field.
That's so funny.
But Jack was fine. He didn't care. Yeah. That part he could care less about. But yeah, it's a fun time. They're not interested in any other sports. The little one is interested in basketball.
Okay.
That's why we have a hoop now in front of the house.
Okay.
I haven't gotten full blown into any other sport. And the reason I got walked down this path was that my older son could have gone into tackle this year during the fall, but he opted out, saying he wanted to have one more year of flag just to get the, which I was really, I thought was really kind of smart. He was like, I just want to get better at the game before I start worrying about tackling. I was like, all right, that's fine.
Yeah, that's great.
I think he's wired like me and he just doesn't like to hit people. That's what I think he really loves football, but, and I would, trust me, if there was a, I think there's one out in your area in Pasadena, an adult flag football, like pickup day thing that you can go do.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
I would absolutely do that in a heartbeat. But my fear is that I would tear an ACL. Playing flag football as a 38-year-old man.
I know for sure that I would. I mean, it is, yeah, I would be walking into the I would walk out of the end zone into the orthopedic surgery center directly if I started to play regular. Yeah, let me share two quick stories because I've done some coaching now. And it's funny. Well, the first one is I'm coaching my 7-year-old in basketball this coming spring. Or we start in the winter. It starts in January.
Now, do you have any experience coaching or playing
very
basketball?
Very little. No, but playing, I mean, I played as a kid.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of the game.
Yeah.
And I kind of assistant coached before. But I'm going to have to do a huge brush up on YouTube and stuff in terms of drills. Oh,
it's such a great time.
And you know, everything. Like, I know that I'm going to look forward to it. But I didn't do it on purpose, exactly. My wife asked me about 4 weeks ago. She said, hey, can you make sure that you sign the kids up for basketball? Registration's open right now. And we do it through our local Y. And I said, sure. And I took a peek and I looked at the – I opened it up on my phone and I saw, oh, it's open until I thought it was like December 10th. For some reason, that was the number in my head. Turns out it was December 5th.
Oh, that's a very different number.
And I find out – and you've probably had this fear. I find out on about December 10th when I go to sign up for it that it's closed and the whole league is full. And, of course, this is something my wife has asked me to do. And our two kids have done basketball for the last few years, really love it, talk about it. They're excited about it. So I'm completely screwed at this point. So fast forward to me placing a panicked call to the sports director of the Y, and knowing they usually are short of coaches, I kind of open with, gee, you know, I was really hoping to coach this year.
the things we do.
I know. And so he was, well I should say the first, his lieutenant had told me that the league was full and they had no more room.
And so climbed the ladder.
And then I said, well, do you have room for someone who's willing to coach a 70? And so we found, I know that, you know, they needed the volunteers. And so that's how I inherited. I'm the proud owner now.
And have you started?
No, we start in January.
Okay.
So I'll be brushing up. And already one of the parents has volunteered to, like, be an assistant.
Oh, great.
I hope he knows more about basketball than I do. But it'll be fun. And then, but I was an assistant coach the last couple of years in Little League, also for my older son. And one thing I've noticed, and I think this is good, like, good for parents to sort of gauge with the parents who want to go to the coaches and complain or ask for more time. Cause this happened a couple of times where we had parents who would come to me or the other coaches and would say, can my son do this or do that? Or my son should play first base. He's as good as any of these other kids. Why don't you let him play first base? Sometimes their requests would be sort of gentle. Other times it would be much more aggressive. And on more than one occasion, I had a parent, and I always gave in to the parents. I was always like, because I kind of, especially at this age group, which was 8, 9, and 10-year-olds, I was kind of like, let's let them all have opportunities.
Yes,
to play.
Yes.
And nobody would ever ride the bench for us. It was really more a question of who was playing what position.
That was why it was so frustrating to hear this lady complain. But yeah.
Yeah, it is hard. It is hard, especially for the parent, because you're given so much of your time. You're not getting, you know, it's all volunteers.
Yeah.
It's easy to forget. But what I found was so funny is sometimes I think for parents, when you're tempted to do that, really talk to your kids about it, because like this one mom insisted that her son wanted to do XYZ, play first, pitch, whatever. And then literally in practice, I would put the kid there and he would ask me not to put him there. Like, please, can I not do this? I don't want to do this. And it was so frustrating because, you know, and that happened with more than one kid. That's and funny. With more. You know, before you do that, make sure you talk to your kid and say, would you want me to discuss it with your coach? Or why don't you say to the coach, you'd like an opportunity to do this or do that.
Yeah, because you're right. You're absolutely right. They don't know. And it always seemed to be the kids that, like I said, the only ones that complained were the parents whose kids weren't at practice every day.
Oh, yeah.
And we did rotate. And that was their whole thing was like, well, this is a developmental league. And I go, well, yeah, but your kid is also the youngest one here. Like, that's the idea. That's why do you think all the other, it's a kindergarten through second grade, first like division. And then after that, it's each individual grade. It goes third only, fourth only, fifth only, sixth, all the way up to almost high school.
Totally.
And so, yeah, I get it.
You got to reward the kids who show up to practices. And not all families can make it to every practice, and you don't always get to control when the times are. So that can be a challenge. But at the end of the day, the kids who are there for practice who are putting the time. And I think there's a life lesson there for the kids that they're going to get the opportunities before somebody who's not.
And it's unfair for, I think, a lot of parents come into it with the expectation that, they put this label on us that we were putting kids in to win, right? Like that's what we were doing and that we were caring too much about winning, but we weren't winning. So it's not
I'm sorry. Wait, why were you putting kids in?
Why wasn't I?
No, I'm kidding. Oh. I'm not here to lose, Justin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My first basketball practice with my 7-year-olds, by the way, I'm just going to run them. We're going to find out who wants to be here.
just until they die. Yeah. Just until they die. Like just said, and we're going to weed out the crop where the cream will rise. And that's how it's going to go. Welcome to your last easy day was yesterday. and that's what it's funny because my older son is now going to go on. I'm going to stay with the younger son and the older son is going to go on to the older team and I'll help out where I can. But I thought it'd be good for him to have somebody else telling him what to do.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see how that goes. Like, what if I become the parent that I'm complaining about? Like, I'm like, well, that's not what he's good at. I don't think I would. But I don't know. Stranger things have happened. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back because I completely walked over. You have a great story about spending the night on a battleship.
I do.
With your kids.
I will share. Yeah, I would love
Chris Mars, Super Dad, back after these messages. Before the thunder.
So people listening live.
So you spent the night on a battleship, and that when you were talking about like, hey, what are we going to talk about the show? My favorite part about this is you said it as if this is common knowledge. Is this not a part of my lexicon of knowing that you could just go spend the night on a battleship with your family or even by yourself?
Oh man, you got to try.
Everybody
it.
Else
it
know this? You think?
I don't know that everybody else knows this, but it's actually look it up. If you live in LA or if you live in other parts of the country, I'm sure do similar programs because one thing. So I did this with the Cub Scouts because my two older sons are involved in the Cub Scouts right now. But we've done it at other venues. A lot of museums now, and the LA Zoo does this, offers these programs where you can bring a group, any group, I believe, any like educational group, to come do an overnight there. And we did it at the Natural History Museum in LA. Wow. Natural History, excuse me. And
what do you, is it like you bivouac? Like, what do you do? You bring a tent?
Yeah. You don't bring a tent, but you bring what we did for the museum and the zoo is you bring like an air mattress and like obviously change of clothes and stuff. And it's indoor camping. I mean, you're basically inside and you're like at the museum, you slept in a great big hall and it's all these other dads and some moms and the kids. And they have people that work there that coordinate the night. So you show up and you do like a tour of the museum and then they generally have a few activities and that all takes a few hours and then they give you dinner. And then at some point at like, 10:30 or something, it's lights out. And then at 6 a.m. everybody wakes up and there's usually another program of some kind in the morning and you're off and home by like 9:30. So this is the third time we've done this, but here in LA in Long Beach is permanently docked as the battleship USS Iowa, which for me was super cool. It was a really, really cool opportunity to do this. And what they do on the Iowa is you don't bring camping gear. You just bring like a sleeping bag and you actually sleep in the racks.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, yeah, like the sailors did. And it's a permanent museum. You can go tour it as a museum any day of the week, I believe. But this is a program they do for educational groups. And when we were there, there was our Cub Scout troop, and then there was one or two other troops from other places, and there may have been a group there that wasn't Cub Scout, so I don't think it's limited to that. But the cool thing, I was really looking forward to it because it was a chance to sort of live like the sailors a little bit. And what we did is we arrived at like 4 o'clock, and then you sort of go aboard and you're on the main deck, and they do like the colors and stuff the way would do it in the Navy, and it's neat. And then they take you down into the giant mess hall. I mean, this ship, by the way, the Iowa is built basically for World War II. And I'm probably going to get some of the facts wrong, but it's like a 950-foot long battleship. It's gigantic. It's definitely of that era. I believe it is one of the battleships that was involved in the last like sea-to-sea combat in American history.
I'll try to look it up here.
Yeah, it's really cool. And on it. At its peak, it had like a crew of something around 2,000 sailors.
Now, the people who are kind of running this, are these, you know, retired military? Or are they like, you know, when you go to Pennsylvania and you can go to, you know, Colonial Williamsburg and it's, you know, yeah. It's the local football coach who's dressed as a pilgrim? Or
it was mostly the tour guides were actual Navy veterans. I think some of them had served aboard the Iowa, and then some of them had served aboard similar ships. And then it seemed like they did also have some people who just worked there in the capacity of this is a museum and we're not necessarily veterans, but we work for the venue itself. And they do events aboard the ship as well. So I don't know as much about that, but we did get a great tour from a veteran Navy sailor who had served aboard the New Jersey, which was a sister ship to the Iowa. So they were basically the same. These were all Iowa class battleships. I learned a ton. But the point, Justin, is that I went to battle myself that night.
What do you mean?
So we arrive, we go down to the mess hall, and you eat in the Navy mess, in the mess in the ship. And so
how big is that? Is that like a school cafeteria? Because I would imagine it's kind of small.
Well, it is like a school cafeteria, but everything is so condensed on the ship. You know, you definitely feel
like you're on top of.
Like, yeah. And they must have just eaten in shifts. This ship was built in the 30s or 40s, but
it was launched on August 27th, 1942.
42, okay, great.
And commissioned February 22nd, 1943 with Captain John L. McRae.
Yeah.
In command.
Big Mac.
USS Iowa's main battery consisted of 9 16-inch 50 caliber Mark 7 guns, which could fire 2,700-pound armor-piercing shells 20 nautical miles.
Oh, yeah.
Her secondary battery consisted of 5-inch 38 caliber guns and twin mounts, which could fire at targets up to 12 nautical miles away. With the advent of air power and the need to gain and maintain air superiority came a need to protect the growing fleet of Allied aircraft carriers. To this end, Iowa was fitted with an array of Oerlikon 20mm and Bofors 40mm anti-aircraft guns to defend Allied carriers from enemy airstrikes.
Oerlikon, I'm surprised you didn't know that word.
I didn't. I'm sorry. Is it really something?
No, I have no idea. I was just giving you a hard time.
You're very good at nailing me, by the way. So far, I think the score is Chris 2, Justin 0. That's how we're going so far. So you went to battle yourself.
Yeah, I went to battle. Well, the ship is really cool, by the way. It is really a neat thing to see. And yeah, the thing had enough. We got a lot of information about the firepower of these ships, in part because the tour guides that night were veterans who had actually been like gunners on these ships. And they were very into the power of the battleship.
And as you're going through these tours, are your kids like, whoa? Or is it more like dad's like, whoa?
Well, I would say, you know what's so funny? This is not a criticism, but I would say the dads were almost more like, whoa. Because, you know, when you start talking about like 50 cal and 20mm, yeah. You know, the kids, it glazes over a little bit. I mean, some of the stuff was really great for them. The tour was probably a little long for my 7-year-old. My 9-year-old really came away with more.
And you just went with the two of them, right? Because the 3-year-old's too young.
Yeah, 3-year-old's too young. I took the two of them, and I actually stayed with, and then they split up the kids by age a little bit. So I stayed with the younger group. And my older son was with some of his buddies. So the tour, I think, was maybe a little better for the grownups because it was a little long, but for the most part, it was great. And the kids just loved it. But we go down and you eat in the Navy, in the mess hall, or I'm embarrassed.
I think you're right.
Yeah, the mess. I'm embarrassed. I don't remember exactly what it was called, but they serve you actual Navy food. And so it wasn't fancy.
Yeah.
It was not.
My grandfather said everything was shit on a shingle when he was in the military.
Yeah.
That's it. That was his term.
That's a great term. And my kids probably ate a little too much. Which I found out.
Do you remember what you had specifically?
What
just,
did we eat?
Did it look like slop, and that's all you remember?
No. It was like a barbecue chicken with sandwiches and stuff, but it was kind of, it was, you know, it was very high school cafeteria level of food.
And I imagine you're a much better person than I am, but I imagine sitting there and watching if my kids were to devour this, you know, cafeteria-esque food.
Yeah.
It would be hard for me not to get bitter about that. Like I've made actual barbecue chicken that they've turned their nose up at.
Right.
But this one that was made in mass to feed 300 people in an overnight, this is so great because it's on a battleship.
Yeah. Yeah, you could probably feed them almost anything on this battleship, and they would have thought it was pretty cool.
Were there vegetables at all, or is it just...
Yeah, there was salad, which I don't know if my little guy ate. My older one probably did.
Yeah.
Gosh, I feel like there might have been like green beans or something. Yeah, it was, you know, it was a square meal.
All right.
But it was, you know, again, it was like cafeteria type food.
Yeah.
And we did that, and then they did get like some ice cream or something, I think, and then we did the tour. And then so we roll around to like 10:30, or 10:30, and that's the time to go check out our racks where we're going to sleep for the night. And I learned that they call them racks in the Navy because the bunks, the beds, are actually named after the medieval torture device.
Really?
Of the rack.
I assume that they are like on a shelf and they collapse up like a Murphy bed, so it looks like a rack of shelves.
Oh, no, well, the veterans that were there giving us tours told us that that's why they call it the rack, because of the torturing element. So just to kind of set the stage, we're, you know, for those of you who haven't been in the bowels of a battleship, the
humble brag.
comfort is not the first priority.
What?
Yeah. I was surprised by that because I thought, God, I thought these guys would fight a lot better if they maybe got 12 hours of sleep in a big, comfortable bed.
Exactly.
These racks were basically three high. But only up to about 5 1/2. Like I'm like 6'3".
Right.
And the top bunk was at about my shoulder, but there's three bunks.
So you got 2 feet above you at each one of those.
Yeah. When I laid in a bunk, you know, I'm taller, but I'm not, I know a lot of guys taller than me. And when I laid in this thing, I laid on the bottom bunk. And when I laid in it, it kind of felt like being in a coffin. My feet were up against the end of it. I'm about as tall as you could possibly be to sleep in one of these. And when I would roll over, my shoulder would actually brush against the top of it. That's how close it is. Really, like if you're claustrophobic, it's probably a little. I don't consider myself claustrophobic, and I felt like a little like, wow, this is tight.
Yeah.
This is tight. And I slept on the bottom of the three bunks, and I put my 7-year-old in the middle and my 9-year-old on top. Because being on the top one was actually very hard to get into for the bigger the dads. But it just seemed like that was a good way to go. So after the tour was over, we go into this area, and the racks are set up in such a way that they've got these sort of little cubbies, but these cubby areas will have 20, 30 people sleeping in a very, very small area. I mean, the size of the studio that we're in now, you probably would be sleeping 15 people. I mean, it's really tight. And there's no, the walls in the area that we were in don't necessarily go to the top. So you are sort of, you know, if you start snoring or something, you can be heard by probably 70 people. And so we got into our pajamas and we put the sleeping bags on the rack and we all got in there and it seemed fine. Everything was going good. Lights.
Now, you're doing a great job of painting this story because now I just imagine there's got to be a moment. You got nothing but dads and kids there, right?
Yeah.
And so there's got to be a snore fest going on.
Oh, my God. That's the key to these campouts.
Did anybody think
that? And I was warned. Some people did, and I should have known better. I didn't. I did bring earplugs to, like, the zoo.
Yeah.
Because one of the things is if you don't have earplugs and you're not one of the first guys to fall asleep, you are screwed.
You're out.
I mean, there were a couple dads in the morning where I was like, dude, I think you need to go to a sleep specialist because you died like 4 times last night. Like,
did anybody rock a CPAP?
Bring your CPAP. Nobody had one. had one that I saw, but there were a number of people that I heard who I think need one.
Yeah, they qualify.
They qualify. That's a real struggle, actually. That is real.
Yes.
And at the museum, when we slept at the History Museum, it was a big marble room, and the echo in there with the snoring was insane. I mean, that's for real. So we're in this little cubby area, and the lights go out at 10:30. And so then there's just a distant light in one of the hallways, and the museum generally provides, I think they've got a staff on that stays up all night, and so they're there to be around. It's not a big staff, and I think they're sort of checking in all the areas where they have people sleeping. But I finally fall asleep, And I think the kids are asleep and I doze off. And at about 1:30 in this very, very dark corner that we're in, I start to hear, "Mommy, Mommy." And I'm like, "Oh no, oh no, oh no." And I reach up because I can literally,
you know, the voice.
I can touch my 7-year-olds. I'm so close. I can reach onto the bunk above me and touch my 7-year-old's head. And I'm like, "Is that him?" And I'm like, he's just like, "What?" And he's getting sick. And he has a little bit of a sensitive stomach. And sometimes when he eats new foods that he hasn't had before, or he overdoes it, he will get sick. So in this pitch black space, I roll out of the bunk because there's no other way to get out of this thing. I go up and I'm like, "Buddy, buddy, are you okay?" And all of a sudden he sits up and he's like, "Daddy." And
I got you covered.
Yeah, right. Yeah, thank you. It starts. Yeah. It starts and it is everywhere. And he's vomiting profusely on
the bed. Is it all staying on the bed, or is he at least shooting it off the bed onto the floor?
It was, I had kind of grabbed him to hold him. So it is staying on the bed for the most part onto me and onto him and onto the sleeping bag. And man, it was brutal. Now keep in mind, we are so close to 50 people. Yeah. And it was so pungent. Like, I mean, I'm like, what? In the hell,
and kid vomit has a, like, I don't know if it, I always ask this to people, but does your kid's vomit smell like rotten Parmesan cheese too?
Mm-hmm.
Like every kid,
yes,
has a,
there's something
that I don't
weird,
remember
yeah.
that smell. I mean, I've yacked when I get a flu, and it does. There's some. It's extra pungent,
right? It's like you just left the Olive Garden. What is going on here? Where did this come from?
Right.
It was extra pungent, and here and because he does have this occasional sensitive stomach, he ends up falling. He does this, covers me, covers him, covers his bed, and falls back to sleep right away.
Nuh-uh.
He's out. He's out cold. He's just laying. Now he's laying in vomit. In his own sick. My 9-year-old, who's on the bunk above him, thankfully out of the line of fire, wakes up and starts almost crying because of the smell.
Yes.
And I'm like, "Oh my God, what the hell am I going to do?
Oh, you poor guy."
I am like, "You got to be flipping kidding me." So luckily, and the kicker was at this moment, for whatever reason, the museum staff must have been off doing other stuff because they were nowhere to be found.
Yeah, you're solo.
Then I'm told one of the other dads, who was one of the leaders, this my buddy Keith, was in the bunk right kind of next door, rolls out, and he's sort of like, "What can I help? What can I help with?" And so he ran and got a couple things. I'm just trying to sort of push everything into one place, and he got some garbage bags and brought back some sort of cleaner that we couldn't even read, didn't know what it was. All we knew, it was some multi-purpose cleaner that smelled like ammonia. I'm trying to use my cell phone to like read stuff. We had a couple flashlights, but it was really hard. I start hearing other kids like wake up complaining about the smell, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm taking off my shirt." Luckily I was wearing a shirt and then an undershirt, so I was at least a little bit okay. And then getting him undressed and putting the sleeping bags into the garbage bags, and long
story
short,
for most of this, he's asleep.
He never woke up again. He slept through the night after
that.
What
a trooper.
Yeah, I know. And it was, I understand that war is difficult.
Yeah.
Like I know this ship served in Vietnam and World War II, and I believe that those guys had it rough, but I don't know if that it was that this rough.
Right.
You know, I mean, you understand.
No, I totally, because, well, here's the thing that I'm sitting here that makes me have a physical response to the tension in this story is that I know how nice of a person you are. And so when you are as nice a person as you, this kind of thing weighs heavy on your soul.
Like, oh,
it
man.
Just, it well, grates again. Like, I wish I could just transport a little bit of douchiness in you to where you just be, shit happens. And you'd be completely indifferent. But I don't know. Am I putting too much on you? Because I feel like I would be sitting there too going, "I'm ruining everybody else's trip. This is so hard."
That's how I felt. And everybody was remarkably cool.
All of us are also like us.
Yeah.
And that if we saw it happen to somebody else, it's like there would be an element of like, "Oh, it's thank God it's him and not me." But that poor person, whatever I could do to make them feel better.
Totally. Totally. And the funny thing is I looked. So right about when this happened, I grabbed my phone to turn on the light and I looked at the clock and it said 1:25 a.m. is when this happened. And I was thinking to myself, okay, just in the back of my head, I'm like, I know the lights go on at 6 a.m. And the truth was leaving was really not an option at this point. Like I talked to my buddy. I was like, "Should I just take him home? Should I just take him home?" And it was going to complicate.
Yeah. How do you get out of there with nobody?
Yeah.
You never found anybody, right?
I never found anybody. Although I know that I really, once by the time I got things settled, I really didn't need them. I know that I could have tracked somebody down. I did go out onto the deck and leave the garbage bags, and the security guard who was out there let me put stuff outside, which was very nice. And then, of course, it starts pouring rain. There's no place to, like – now, my bunk now, by the way, is covered in sick.
Sick, yeah.
And I cleaned it up, but it's still – it was not an area that I wanted to just go lay. And, like, I get all this stuff done. I finally – my buddy had gone back to bed. I just spend, you know, the next – what felt like 3 hours getting everything coordinated. I'm not sleeping at all. I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. And I go to look at my phone again, and I'm thinking, okay, man, this happened at like 1:25. It's got to be like 3:30 in the morning by now, 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't have that much time. I turn my phone on. It says 1:27. It was daylight savings.
Oh no!
And I was like, I was like, what? What? No! Like, this was. I couldn't believe it. I have never been
so horrible.
I have never hated daylight savings more.
Nobody hates daylight savings more than parents. And you have found a new level of Dante's Inferno of hatred.
Oh my God. It was the worst.
Oh, you poor guy. Chris Mars.
Oh,
that's so great.
It was brutal. The somewhat happy ending is I eventually, when I did get everything cleaned up, I did find a few bunks over. There was one empty one, and I slid on there with no pillow, no blanket, anything, and just laid there for a few hours trying to sleep through the snoring and stuff. I think I may have dozed off for like 30 minutes, but it was hell.
Ah.
It was hell, Justin.
It was.
Let me tell you about my serving aboard the Iowa.
All it took was one tour.
All it took, right. And then, of course, my 7-year-old wakes up in the morning. He's like, oh, are we having pancakes for breakfast?
With just a stain of vomit.
Yeah. No, he was. I had put him back like in his uniform or something, out of his pajamas or something. And he wakes up and he's perfectly fine. Yeah. And he's like, you know, so it was funny. The other parents and a lot of these guys and a couple of moms have become friends. And it was, they all, of course, were all just saluting me,
yes,
as the man who was left behind.
That would be great. As you're disembarking the Iowa, they make like an aisle, and everybody's just
yeah, right. As you walk out. Right. They take my kids' sleeping bags, yeah, and they bury them at sea off the side.
Somebody plays taps. Right.
There's a couple like Marines folding a flag as I leave. You know. Oh man.
Oh, that's great.
I would say though, for dads, I mean that was a really cool thing, and I know people have said, you know. I saw the Midway down in San Diego quite a few years ago, and it's a cool – I always love seeing that kind of stuff. Like, it is neat. And you do – I'll tell you this. You do appreciate the conditions that the Navy sailors and veterans lived in.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had to sleep in – the closest thing I have is we did the – I don't know the name of it, but the battleship that they have out in Pearl Harbor. We did that as when I was
there.
Oh,
the Arizona maybe?
Yeah,
the one that sunk?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
And so – Well, no, this one didn't sink because this one's there's that one that you could. Well, maybe I'm wrong.
Sometimes it's hard to tell if they've sunk or not.
Really?
Oh, I'm kidding. No,
like, 3-0. You son
of a
bitch.
No. We're not keeping score.
I'm keeping score, you a-hole. No, there's because you could see the residue of one that's there that they didn't like. They didn't clean up or whatever. And then there's the one that's just kind of docked there that you could walk around. And we took an audio tour. I remember we didn't have kids at the time. But I got to see the bunks, and you see how I know what you're talking about when you see how close they are.
Yeah.
And I remember that, but the idea of getting to sleep in them does sound super, super cool. I want to ask, though,
because
cool. You kept saying, for me, do you have like a history of Navy in your family, or you just always been kind of a nerd about like ships and stuff? Or,
you know, well, it's funny.
Like history.
I love history, and I don't have any real military history in my family. I've had a couple uncles who served in the Air Force, I think, but I personally have no close affiliation with it, although I'm a little embarrassed. This is why I can't believe that I can't remember the names of all these places, because I did do, as an actor, I worked on a show called The Last Ship, which recurred on that show. Yeah, we did, and I spent a lot of time filming.
It was on TNT, wasn't it?
It was on TNT, yeah. In fact, the final season comes out I think in the spring, season five. And so, although my character did pass away in season two.
That's when I stopped watching.
Yeah, I know. Well, a lot of people, I think, had that same feeling. They were like, something was missing. Yeah. Spoiler alert if you're just starting season two.
Yeah.
Don't get too attached to me. but we...
what if they
did.
Yeah, I know, right? The cool part about that job, I mean, I loved the job in many ways, you know, for all sorts of reasons. But one of the really unique things as an actor to do was we shot so much of what I did actually at Naval Base San Diego, down in San Diego, on real active working Navy destroyers. And almost, I think, all of the background actors on those show, on that show, especially when we were shooting there, were real live working Navy and got a lot of chance to talk to those guys and girls and women and really appreciate what they do and like the sacrifices they make and the conditions that they live in. It's been a few years now since I finished that job on that show. So I was a little embarrassed to find myself not being able to remember what everything was called because I knew it so well for a while.
Hey, you're up to the next gig. Yeah. You're an actor. No worries.
You're right. Exactly. Right. And so, I do really love that Navy history and stuff. And one of the highlights of that was having the veterans who gave you tours and stuff and seeing sort of their love for the ship.
Oh, yeah.
And how much it means to them.
That's an extra cool element.
Yeah. And you do. And like, I was excited about sleeping on the ship and, you know, the incident aside, I think it still was a great thing. And so if you get the chance to do it, and then my wife is from a town in Wisconsin called Manitowoc, which is where they built submarines during World War II in Wisconsin, which is crazy. It's actually, I believe it is considered the inlandmost wartime naval port in the history of the world. They built subs there because they thought it was basically an impenetrable place to make. It was a shipbuilding town anyway. They'd always built ships there and they built yachts there now.
I'm sorry for my geographical ignorance. Is there a way to get from the Great Lakes out to the ocean or is it?
Well, let me give you a little maritime history here.
Here we go.
You know what's interesting about how they did that? There's a great museum there too. That was before the St. Lawrence Seaway existed, so you couldn't use
there
that.
There was no way.
What they did was they took the subs from down Lake Michigan. So this town is on Lake Michigan about 150 miles north of Chicago. And they took they towed them to Chicago and brought them through the Chicago River and then brought them through a series of canals through Illinois to the Mississippi River, and then they brought them down the Mississippi and out New Orleans.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That seems like such a, that's a lot of effort when you could just drop a factory in Galveston and be there.
Right. You know, I don't know exactly why they decided to do it, but I learned that when we did the tour with my sons a few summers ago, and they do the same thing there. I think they do sleepovers on that submarine, and like, if you think the battleship conditions are tight, those submarine conditions were insane. And the way those guys lived was really crazy. It was hard and difficult, you know, but it was like, but there's a lot of cool places you can do that with your kids. And I've found that my kids really enjoy it. They don't always, I think a lot of the facts and stuff that get into goes over their head.
But here's the thing. I think we get hung up on these kinds of experiences and stuff where we need, when I say we, I'm always saying me, but where it's like, I want them, like, if they're not having the same enjoyment experience, you know what I mean? Like you see it through your lens, but in actuality, like there's no way they're not going to be 38 and remember the time that I threw up all over the USS Iowa. Like there's no way,
right?
Even if he was like the pancake, or even funnier is that what if he doesn't remember throwing up, but he's like, I remember I had really good pancakes at the Iowa. That was fun.
I remember my dad didn't look so hot in the morning, but I don't remember what else
happened.
He was
super cranky. I don't know.
He hardly touched his pancakes.
But I do remember the salute that he was getting all afternoon.
Yeah, I remember people shaking his hand as if someone had passed away.
Such a great story.
My wife always will comment about, you know, getting badges for our parenting sash. Yeah. You know, not deliberately attached to this scouting activity, but she will often say that. And she's like, you definitely got a parenting badge that night.
My favorite element is the daylight savings. That is too beautiful. All right, so let's take another break. We'll come back and do a little moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with a Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to dadgear.com and use promo code DADPODCAST at checkout for 20% savings. Made in the USA.
There's a lot of dad in that. I just now realized.
Yeah.
What a dad.
Who's
this,
it for again?
Dad gear.
Dad gear.
And then use dad.
And they make
podcast.
The gear for who?
For dad.
Oh, for, okay. Gotcha.
For dad. Well, it's dads and some moms.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know why I said some moms. Oh, that's Naptime Radio. They say for moms and some dads. all right. Would you like to go first or would you like me to go first?
I'll let you go first because I've got to remember what my mom.
Well, you just had an incredible experience on a battleship, too, with your kids. It's not. I feel like it does qualify as moment of the week because that's pretty incredible. Mine is, I think it's the, it's really stupid and I'm kind of mad that I haven't done it before this, but it is the simple joy that seems to be kind of coming over my house around this time of year, the holiday time, in that we're doing the Elf on the Shelf. Mm-hmm. His name is Jelly Bean. It's almost like, I'm going to say this.
Ours is Scooter McElf.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's his name.
That's great. How long have you guys been doing the Elf?
I want to say this is maybe year four.
Year four. Okay. We've had him, I think, for 4 years, but he sat in the box in my son's shelf in his closet. Never opened. Like, I suggested it to my wife, but I used to always be on the road, and then somehow we forgot. And they did an Elf on the Shelf in his classroom, and he came home and said, "We should get an Elf on the Shelf. I love this thing."
Right? Okay.
So, and I was like, great, because we already got one. But it's more of a moment for me because it's not how I'm wired, and especially not how I'm been wired this past few months. I've been so absent-minded. I keep forgetting things, and usually I'm pretty on point with stuff. And so the fact that I'm able to remember to check in on this elf every time is something I'm very, very proud of. But there's an element that I like, and it's frustrating in that They seem to be like, oh, there it is. Even when I try really hard, there was one time I put him up on top of the blinds.
Okay.
And because we have a little a sconce or what is it? Valance? Valance.
Okay.
We have a valance around the blinds that he could just pop up there. And our walls are red in our dining room. So he blended in. And that was the one they were like, I don't know where he is. And they went everywhere.
You camoed him.
Yeah. Every other time, like, there he is. There he is. But it is that thing of that they're just excited for the holiday. There's, you know, they're doing Christmas dances, and I don't know. I've always been a guy who really got into the holiday spirit mostly on like Christmas morning when it all happens. But I don't know. That's the best I could say is that it's these, and it's mostly because I've been working so much that I haven't had a lot of one-on-one time with the kids. So I have these brief interactions, and so the other moments that we've had have been built around, and it's so cheesy, but I love it, is we've been watching Third Rock from the Sun.
Okay.
We started on Netflix. They had the whole entire series on Netflix, and I used to love the show, but that was when you couldn't watch it all the time, right?
Okay, sure.
So now, Netflix stopped having it.
Oh.
And so I thought I was going to be able to watch the whole series, and it didn't happen. We didn't stay on top of it. Well, now it's on Amazon Fire, so we're watching it on that. And it was just, we watch these episodes, and it's so cheesy, but we sit there as a family all laughing at the same parts in this like 20-year-old, 30-year-old sitcom. It's,
yeah.
So those, that kind of stuff, that it's a family and then the mother-in-law's coming and all of that stuff. And I think it'll be a lot of fun for the kids. So those are my moments.
Oh, that's a great moment of the week.
Yeah, it's
moments of the week. Of the season. Moments of the season.
Yes, that's a better way. Nobody's really said anything. Although, that makes me think of something that Jack has been. I need to start writing these things down where he just says random shit. If my wife was here, she would remember. Like, he just kicks out random shit. We went to go see Star Wars, and then we went to go see Thor, and that's trending down to not being a moment of the week, where he's gotten into this trend where if we go out to get lunch, he becomes a total asshole until he gets walked outside and get explained to him, like, listen, you can't be an asshole.
Right.
Like, I need you to adjust. I don't know if you're tired. I don't know if you're hungry. I get that. I'm not saying you always have to be in a good mood, but I'm just saying you can't be against everybody else having a good time.
You can't ruin everyone.
Yeah. Exactly. So, all right, you're up, Chris.
Okay. I will say this. This was one moment recently that I really loved. And I think it was actually, we kind of stumbled onto this, but maybe this is a fun idea for kids. My 9-year-old, so my 7-year-old just turned 7 a couple of weeks ago. And we're going to see some family around Christmas time. And so he kind of said that he wanted to do a birthday party with his cousins when we go see them. So we decided, okay, we're not going to do like a big birthday party or anything for him now. But then my 9-year-old, not really knowing what this entailed, said, hey, let's do a surprise party for him here.
Cool.
Yeah. And so I think my 9-year old just in his head thought it'd be really fun to plan a surprise party. And then, but it ended up being this awesome thing. And it was really great for him and the 7-year old. So basically, what we did is my wife just invited two of his buddies from school, my 7-year old's buddies from school and their families who we know, to come over on a Friday night for pizza. And I took my younger two. My job was to take them out and distract them. And we had told our middle guy, our 7-year-old, he wasn't going to have a party. And I took them out. But I said, you do get to pick out one gift at the store. So we'll go to this little toy shop and pick out something. And so I took them. We went. He picked out a gift for himself. And
The little one know about the surprise? Or are they
No, the little one, yeah. No. He could not be trusted. Yeah,
he's a mole real quick.
He was going to crack under questioning. real quick, he would be delighted to share any piece of information that he has about this. He's loose lips sink ships. Yes. There we go. He's got them. So I took those two, and then I just planned to be out for about 40 minutes, and then my wife and the 9-year-old scrambled and put up a bunch of decorations and stuff, and we had pizza coming or whatever. And then the two families arrived while we were gone, and then I got the thumbs up text, and I took the other two back to the house, and my 7-year-old was happy and excited because he just gotten this little toy that we let him buy. But then, and he knew he was going to do a birthday thing with his cousins. But then we walked into the house and it was all quiet and dark, and I let him go first, and then boom, everybody came out and said surprise. And again, it was a small group, but he was so happy.
Oh.
And the 9-year-old was so happy.
Yeah.
Because he got to help plan this thing. And so, I don't know, like I thought to myself, like this would be a great thing for parents to do to help engage the other kids.
Awesome.
and make it a nice thing. So that was, and again, it was a small little group. It was two other families and
yeah, so it made it super easy, but it truly was the thought.
Yeah. And then I will add this, my wife also that night had a great idea. She put together a little scavenger hunt, and maybe people are doing this, but I hadn't seen it before. We broke the kids into two little groups and gave them each a camera of one of our phones. And they have a list of like 30 things on their scavenger hunt. And it was simple. It was like something red, something that gets eaten, you know, something that is pretty, whatever. And then the kids had to find the things around the house. Each of the teams.
This was at
the birthday party. Yeah. They had to find these things and then take a picture of their team with the item. And then at the end, we sort of beamed all the pictures up to the TV and went through, and it was a really fun little activity that the kids really loved. So if you're looking for something simple, and it was I think it was my wife's idea to do that. I think she had seen that done somewhere. And she's going to be mad. I'm just giving her no credit whatsoever. She definitely got that idea from someone else.
Tell her we couldn't record the episode. It'll be fine.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Computer broke. It was weird.
Yeah, you know, Justin edits those things weird. That's not at all what I said.
You're just a product of the media. So that's what it is. Yeah. The media spins it. It's just a spin zone.
So two little simple things as these birthday parties get so expensive and so, you know, overproduced sometimes, two little simple things, make it a surprise and it engages the other kids a little bit. And then, maybe a little like scavenger hunt or something to keep it.
No, I love it. It's great to have. It's funny because I think like I was saying before, we get these ideas in our head, like we see it through our lenses. Yeah. And I've done this, it took my son kind of pointing out to me when he said he wanted to have his friends over. And then I asked him, well, who would you like to have? And he only rattled off four kids. And I was like, awesome. Like we could definitely do that. And then it worked out because the nice thing is you probably already know these families, but I didn't at the time.
Sure.
So we brought these and now we've become friends with everybody. We hang out with them. We go do date nights with them. It's great. It's great. So yeah, the simpler the party, even though in your mind you think you need to have this big production, but if they only want to have, the only thing that I think can make it weird is that there is a kind of a weird number where like if it's just two or three kids, nobody gets butthurt for not getting an invite.
Right.
But once you start transitioning.
Five or six,
or maybe double digits. I don't know. Once, you know what I mean? But there is a threshold where all of a sudden now it's exclusionary as opposed to just limited. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's intimate.
You want to be polite and kind to everybody. You don't want any kids to feel left out. And I think sometimes making it a whole family thing, it makes it a little, well, clearly this was more of a family party.
Yes.
If we were throwing something where we were inviting 10 or 12 kids, we would have definitely, we've always kind of played by this rule. We would have invited the entire class.
The entire class, yeah.
Oh, all the boys, at least. With us, if you have a boy, yeah, you can get away with that. You just invite the boys or just invite the girls. But yeah, this worked out. So hopefully people listening in my son's class don't think, why the did I not get an invite to that?
Because it was a surprise.
It sounds like an amazing surprise party, and I love surprises.
That's also a funny thing, too, because you have well, I guess the parents could just know, because I just think that the more kids that know about the surprise party that are friends.
Oh, yeah. I should have added that. Yeah, we were very careful that the kids did not know they were coming over.
Yeah.
And
that
so
was just the last minute thing.
Yeah, only the parents knew.
Was there any element when he said, well, we're not going to do a party with your friends? Was he like, man, was he upset, or was he kind of like, oh, okay.
If he was upset, he never expressed it around me. And then my wife must have, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if she had to handle a little bit of complaints about that, because of course he wants something, but she reiterated him a number of times that we were going to do something with his cousins and stuff, like go bowling.
That's
or something. That'll be simple too.
That's good. Good for you, man. Good for you. So, solid moments. All right. You can send me an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. Chris, for anybody who this is the first time you're hearing this episode, you have a cool, like, kind of, what would you call this? Like Santa. I remember being like a radio show that you could listen to with your kids on Christmas Eve, right?
Yeah. So I created this, you know, I work in comedy as do you. And I created this thing last year that I wrote with some really talented comedy pals and voice actor pros. And this was all born out of the idea that, you know, our kids, my oldest had kind of started asking questions and sniffing around about Santa. And he very, very much wants to believe, as I think so many of them do in that 8, 9, 10 range when they start, you know, really transitioning out of Santa, but also wanting to know that it's true. So I created this, basically it's a fictional newscast. It's a little 10-minute piece that sounds real. It sounds like a real live AM newscast that you listen to on Christmas Eve with your kids. Although it doesn't have to be Christmas Eve, because I've actually gotten a bunch of emails from people this year saying, oh, hey, we put on the newscast going to look at Christmas lights this year. And we said, hey, kids, this is the actual news from last Christmas. Listen to this. And it's basically you're listening to sort of this AM newscast.
It's great.
That has these little news bulletins about, you know, regular stories that are all Christmas themed and very kids safe. And then throughout, there's this breaking news about this mysterious streak that's in the sky, and the Air Force comments on it. And
there's lots of fun jokes for the parents.
We design, you know, I write comedy, and we really try to make it funny. So we put in some commercials and stuff. So our hope is that it really helps keep the Santa magic alive for your kids, and sort of gives any of the skeptical ones a real, like, wait a second, this is legit. Meanwhile, and gives you know, mom and dad a big laugh. And we have a website now. There's a little website for it that I put together. It's just called ChristmasEveNews.com. It's also on Facebook. You can find it on Facebook at Christmas Eve News Radio. And then it's on iTunes. This is absolutely a for-profit venture, Justin. No, but I made it for fun.
As it should be.
I made it for fun. It's $2 on iTunes. So if you want to get it. And there's a version for the there's WELF News, which is for people who live in the land of the East, where W is the call sign. And
then
there's KELF News, in case your kids are so savvy. Although I did that, and
so
everyone...
If I go to iTunes and search Christmas Eve News, it'll come up and I'll see an option to get the W or the K.
Well, actually, you just get it. You just get once, and it gives you both of them.
Oh, okay.
And so, but it's like, and that was an iTunes lesson I learned. It's just over 10 minutes. And if it's over 10 minutes, it automatically gives you both.
Oh, okay.
It's like an album only thing, but you'll have both of them. But some kids are smart enough to be like, wait a second, K-E-L-F-K-E, what is that? But, you know, it doesn't sound like a radio station, but I probably overthought that.
Because here's the thing, I would have never have thought of that. Mm-hmm. But there would have been a certain point where maybe something, but you never know. You never with kids today, they listen to me, kids today, but you never know what they could figure out. I think that's, and it makes it more fun.
Yeah.
I think that's.
So it was something fun, and I got to tell you, like, the response we got to it last year was, like, so overwhelming. So many of my friends, and I just gave it away to a ton of my friends after I made it, because I was like, I just want people to have this. And people called and said, oh, my God, the kids bought it, hook, line, and sinker. They were, like, sending me pictures of their kids looking out into the sky. And then we listened to it in the car with my kids, and I'm one of the voices on it. And my wife set it up. We were in Wisconsin, and my wife said, hey, kids, you know, your Uncle Mike said that there's a news guy up here that sounds just like Dad. should we listen? Should we check it out? And they're like, yeah, that's weird. Let's listen. So we're in the car on Christmas Eve going, I think we were going from like, you know, Christmas Eve mass to a party. And we put this thing on for 10 minutes and the kids just bought it hook, line, and
sinker. That's great.
And it was really fun. So
this guy sounds better than Dad.
Yeah. That was the funny thing. They were like, no, this doesn't sound like Dad. And, you know, I'm sitting there doing my best, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to, you know, that.
That's funny.
So check it out if you get a chance.
Where can they, I thought I had you in my document here, but I don't. Where can they find you on the Twitter?
Oh, it's at ICMars.
That's right.
I see the letter C,
or is it the letter C?
Letter C.
That's right, because for Chris. And then there's two R's in Mars, correct?
Like the planet with two R's,
ICMars. All right, perfect. Chris, thank you so much.
Absolutely, Justin. This is always a blast. I love the show. I love listening to it. I throw it on in the car. It's such a good job, and you do such a good job.
Well, thanks, man.
It's
fun too. Kind of you.
It's very fun to come do the show with you
all. So don't forget, ChristmasEveNews.com. There's a link in the description of this episode. You can go to the website or do a search for it in iTunes. I'm sure if you go to the website, there's links and everything there for you to find a way to get that for this holiday season or for next. If you're listening to this and it's next November of 2024 or whatever, you can still check it out. I'm sure it is still there. And thank you guys for tuning in. On behalf of Chris Mars, this is Just Worship saying, hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.